now a literary masterpiece written by a 9-year-old. A 9-year-old me, in fact. It is a 2-part movement. The first one is entitled The Little War. The second, The Little War II. And it goes like this. Oh, before we begin, there's a few characters that it will be helpful for you to be familiar with. The first of which is Schweitzer the Doggo. So when you hear Schweitzer the Doggo, think of that face. That face, yep. The other faces it will be helpful if you are familiar with. Oss, that's me, 9 years old. And Chrissy, the sister caught in the middle of two obnoxious brothers. And Brandon, the eldest, who had to put up with us both, mostly myself. The story goes like this. Usually, Austin didn't like tomatoes. True, I was a very picky child. But today was different. He was trying to find as many tomatoes as he could find. Why are you trying to collect so many tomatoes? His sister Chrissy asked. It's a secret, said Austin. Soon he thought he had enough. He began to implement his plan. He started to put them in Brandon's bed. When Brandon went to bed that night, he laid in the tomatoes. The next day, Brandon beat Austin up. Austin promised to eat all the tomatoes if Brandon would stop beating him up. However, Austin didn't eat the tomatoes that day. Sinister. He waited for a few days because he hoped Brandon would forget to make him eat them. Brandon remembered a week later. And by then, the tomatoes were rotten. Brandon decided to give Austin a choice. He had to eat new tomatoes or stand still while Brandon threw the rotten tomatoes at him. A kind and gracious older brother. Austin chose to eat them, but Austin ate under the trampoline, and Schweitzer, doggo, Schweitzer came over to where Austin was sitting. Austin gave the tomatoes to Schweitzer. The next day, Schweitzer vomited the tomatoes all over the lawn. Brandon, being the eldest and the one who most of the chores and responsibilities fell to, had to clean it up. When he cleaned it up, he took it upstairs and put it in Austin's bed. There's a running theme here. For some reason, we like to do stuff to each other's beds. Austin took an open can full of paint and put it above Brandon's door. When Brandon came in, the paint spilled all over him. Austin taped Brandon's door handles so he couldn't come out, and they both lived happily ever after. When you write such a hit as The Little War Part 1, you have to give the people what they want and write The Little War Part 2, as you can imagine, which I had by this time learned something about literary devices. So it begins with the present moment, Austin taped to a chair with his mouth taped shut as well, pondering whether he should try to drink water through his nose because he's thirsty. Then he rewinds in time in his mind, literary device, and he runs through how he was led up to this moment. It was a series of escalating pranks that had involved Schweitzer and more bodily functions, different than vomiting, which I won't put you through. And it ended with Austin sitting there, and that's how Austin came to be taped to a chair, wondering if he should drink through his nose, the end. I hadn't learned much at this point about resolution, about how to wrap up a story nice and neatly. And it seems to me that this story, written by a 9-year-old Austin, is kind of an extremely vegetarian version of the story of Samson. And if you remember the story of Samson, there is this moment where he decides he wants a bride from the Philistine group of people, and his parents are urging him, no, why not a nice Jewish girl? Please, you could have your pick of any of the nice Jewish girls. No, has to be a Philistine. And so he sends his parents to go retrieve this young lady who had caught his eye. During the wedding ceremony, he's interrupted, and he leaves to go do what he does and beat people up. And when he comes back to pick up his bride, he is surprised by a bizarre detail, a turn in the story, that when he comes back, his father-in-law is like, oh, I thought you hated her. I gave her to a friend of yours. Well, now a used-to-be friend, apparently. And Samson's left like, you thought I hated my new wife? And so you gave her away? Now I have the right to get even with these Philistines. And isn't that how it goes? Ah, now I have the right. Something was done to me, and now I have the right. So the story continues to escalate, and it gets a bit darker until there is bloodshed, and not just one or two, but if you know the story, thousands, until it takes both Samson's life and lots of Philistine lives. I would say that this story of Samson is not the story of a hero, but rather a warning tale about the cycle of violence and how destructive our instinct for retaliation can be. We find Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he is with his friends, and they're surrounded by this other group, this group coming to arrest him, to take him, to put him on trial. And he's caught there in the garden. There is this group moving in, and as we just saw, Peter takes out a knife and pause. We'll come back. So, kids, you just witnessed the children's story. So when we say unpause, you got to remember where we're at. Peter raised the knife, pause. The way that Jesus came to teach, I would say, is not a way of individualism, but rather communal salvation. The way that Jesus came to teach is a way to be together, a way to be in relationship with the body, but also larger society. And hope, if we are to have it, requires community, because one cannot truly have hope alone. Hope requires a community. At the very core of reality, God, at the very core of all that is truly real, we find not just one, but this mystery of three in one somehow. And if anybody can explain that to me in a way that doesn't involve a banana or an egg or a reference to water being in three states, then I would like to hear it. But still, so far, in my mind, it is a mystery, and I think it is beautiful that it remains a mystery. And at the heart of this divine mystery, we find three and yet one. This circle of giving, this circle of mutual transfer of love and of service. At the very core of reality of the universe, we find an example of what it means to be in relationship and community. And if we look in our larger society right now, we don't see community being fostered in very many areas. Rather, we see fear. We see fear between ethnic groups. We see fear between political parties and social classes and genders and religions. We see fear between generations. We see strife between humans and the rest of creation. We are afraid of each other. Fear is what drives retaliation, I believe. We lash out in fear, and we lash out on social media. You know this to be true, right? Log on to Facebook and whoa, like I wasn't expecting that much like negativity at first thing in the morning. You get on Instagram and find all manner of things. We lash out largely in fear. Thanksgiving is coming up. We'll find ourselves around tables with people near and dear to us. And then we will wonder why we didn't leave before the pie came out, because it was just a little bit too long to stay. Because we start kind of lashing out at each other, right? The people closest to us, sometimes passive aggression comes in and we start lashing out. Well, no, I'm right. Well, we're all right, right? Each one of us is convinced that we're right. I'm right. I know that I'm right. And I'm pretty sure you all know that you're right too, right? We all know that we're right. There must be a different way than treating Samson as if he is the role model to follow and continuing the cycle of violence. I would like to imagine and hope that I have grown up a bit since 9 years old, and I have learned a little bit about how to use that fruit of the Spirit, self-control, to keep my instinct to retaliate under control. In my best moments, I work towards reconciliation, and this is something I can say with surety that I learned from you all. from my community, from our community, from La Sierra, I can say with surety that this group of people, this body, values the necessity of community, and not just for community's sake, right? Not just for the sake of staving off loneliness, although that is a nice benefit of community. It helps us not be alone, but for the greater goal, not just for community's sake, but for the purpose of ultimate importance of offering our tribe as a body ready to do the work of God in the world. I can say that this community values that because I have seen it in the 3 years that I have been here. I have had the opportunity and the privilege to see the most diverse group of people I've ever had the honor of calling family, build community meal by meal, and warm beverage by warm beverage, and conversation by conversation, Sabbath by Sabbath, through tragedy and through celebration. I've seen this group of people rally around causes and show up for board meetings, open your wallets, or just come offer your hands for service projects if you don't have money to give. I have seen you all show up at prayer vigils to come, cry, and pray and be together. I have seen you wake up early on Wednesday mornings to come turn the lights on at community services and work as a team to remove obstacles out of the path of our neighbors in need here in our zip code. These things indicate to me that this community values real community, not just the superficial level of community, but real community. And to build real community takes a labor of love. And it is labor, isn't it? The labor is this. Whatever your political stance, wherever you fall across the spectrum, and it is a spectrum, because it's not as simple as A or B, right? We find ourselves conflicted. It is complex. We find ourselves across the spectrum, and wherever you find yourself across the spectrum, one thing is clear, that we have all felt or feel voiceless at some time in the recent past. Across the spectrum, we have felt afraid. Across the spectrum, we have ended up with wounds along the way. Violence, sometimes physical, but so much more commonly verbal, spiritual, emotional, has come from parties across the spectrum. But love doesn't let that slide. Love interrupts the cycle of violence and commands a different way. Where were we in the story? If we unpause, where are we at? Kids? Okay, I saw a hacking motion. Okay, Peter had the knife and he sliced off a part of the body. This group of people was coming on a mission. They were ready to snatch up Jesus and take him to trial. But Jesus interrupts the scene and everybody waits with bated breath, their eyes focused on what Jesus is doing, because he is doing something pretty outlandish, right? He bends down and he picks up, gross, right? He bends down and he picks up this severed ear. He heals the wound. First, he acknowledges the wound. He heals the wound. And in so doing, teaching this, Peter, the external threat to the community is not what I'm worried about. The real threat is the internal threat. And you, Peter, right now, are the internal threat, because this community, this body that we have, stands for something so much larger than retaliation. It stands for reconciliation. Retaliation comes from a place of fear. It comes from a place of pain, right? Anytime that I have acted out in retaliation, it's because I'm afraid or I'm hurt. Whether you're 9 years old or much older, we act out in either fear or pain whenever we retaliate. That's where retaliation comes from. So where does reconciliation come from? Jesus bends down and he picks up the ear. teaching that reconciliation comes from a place much different than retaliation. It comes from a place of love, of joy, of peace, of patience, of goodness. These things that we've been focusing on, these fruits of the Spirit that we have been focusing on in this last series. 50 years ago, about a month ago, 50 years ago, does that make sense? A month ago, in October, 50 years ago, Martin Luther King Jr. was in Chicago, and he was leading a group of about 700 people on a peaceful march asking for fair housing, and about 10 times that amount of people showed up to protest their protest. So as they were marching, they were having things hurled at them, not just words and not just spit, but those things as well, but also objects. Martin Luther King Jr. fell to the ground after being struck in the head by a brick, bleeding and dizzy. He got back up and they continued the march because that's what they did. That's what they were about. Not retaliation, but peaceful protests leading to reconciliation. A couple days later, they came back to do the same thing because that's what they did. And while they were marching, they were met with the same response. Bottles were being thrown, bricks were being thrown, and now the security had tightened up around Martin Luther King Jr. after the incident a few days before. But he broke free of his security detail, and he came face to face with a particularly vitriolic and violent young man, and he came up and he looked him in the eye and he said, "You are too young and too good looking and too smart to be as filled with hate as you are." And he kept marching. And Jesus healed the ear and said, "We are on a mission that is so much bigger than retaliation. We are building a community that is built on love and on joy and on peace. We did not come to retaliate against the external threat. We came to stand in solidarity with the voiceless and the vulnerable." To do this begins within. I know this to be true because if 9-year-old Austin came home from school one day and had had a bad day at school, guess who paid for it? Doggo. I don't remember kicking the dog, and don't judge me for this. I don't remember kicking the dog, but for the sake of this illustration, if little 9-year-old Austin had had a bad day at school, it was Doggo that paid the price for it. Because retaliation comes from a place of pain, because we know that we aren't meant to suffer alone. And so we'd rather make someone else suffer with us through violence than suffer alone, because we know on a deep level that we're made for community. But there is a better way. There is a better way than passing on the pain. Whatever pain we do not acknowledge, we will end up transmitting. Whatever pain we do not recognize and reconcile within ourselves, we will hand to someone else, whether it is our beloved pup, or whether it is the Philistines, or you fill in the blank. We will pass on the pain unless we acknowledge it and reconcile it within ourselves. This week, scrolling through Instagram, I was inspired on a deep level by a repost of one of our 13-year-old, one of our freshman girls. And whether or not you can say all these things with surety, take inspiration from the sentiment of this post, regardless of where you fall on all of these issues. Be inspired by somebody proclaiming their commitment to what they believe is a way to live out the gospel. She posted this: "If you wear a hijab, I'll sit with you on the train. If you're trans, I'll go to the bathroom with you. If you're a person of color, I'll stand with you if the cops stop you. If you're a person with disabilities, I'll hand you my megaphone. If you're an immigrant, I'll help you find resources. If you're a survivor, I'll believe you. If you're a refugee, I'll make sure that you're welcome. If you're a veteran, I will take up your fight. If you are LGBTQ, I won't let anybody tell you that you're broken. If you're a woman, I'll make sure you get home okay. If you're tired, me too. If you need a hug, I've got an infinite supply, and if you need me, I'll be with you. All I ask is that you be with me too. Because we are not meant to be isolated, suffering alone. We are meant to be in community, and the church community is called to be a community of reconciliation. And it would seem that now, at our point in history, is a moment, a pivotal moment, for the church to be a space for reconciliation. Because if not here, then where else? I have a friend named Sean. He flies down every, this is us with dirty hands after rock climbing, doing our whatever we're doing. He flies down every fall and he helps facilitate our rock climbing weekend. He leads us out into the wilderness and teaches us how to encounter our Creator in the wilderness. And he works when he's not coming and running rock climbing weekends for La Sierra University Church Youth Group. He is a wilderness therapist out of Bend, Oregon. 8 days in a row, they take trauma patients, 8 days at a time, I should say, out into the wilderness to encounter their deepest pain, to come face to face with the conflict within. And as you can imagine, this is not a peaceful process always. Even though he is there as a facilitator and a friend, he has all manner of curse words placed before his name and all kinds of things hurled at him because he is a place of authority, and the people that they're working with can't help but lash out at authority because of circumstances in their lives. He has things yelled at him, obscenities yelled at him, but instead of responding with retaliation, instead of letting it wound him and respond from that place of pain, he instead looks people in the eye and responds from a place of love, saying, "I hear that you're hurting right now. Tell me more about it." And that isn't a magic wand that makes the situation better, you can imagine. Sometimes the obscenities continue, but little by little, looking each other in the eye and acknowledging that there is pain and that we are here with each other is a way forward. And it is such a much better way forward than 9-year-old Austin had the imagination to come up with of continuing the cycle of violence. Jesus taught us to be together. He taught us a better way. He taught us a way to live out of the fruits of the Spirit, out of love, out of joy, out of peace, out of patience, and those things given to each other as a gift. We're going to sing as a benediction now, the song that we opened up with, and sing it out as if it were a prayer. And then we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. And as we are leaving, you are invited to walk out these doors, or if you go out here, to walk around to the front and participate in an experiment that you saw right up here last week, this experiment of what we are calling visual communion, this experiment of sitting face-to-face, hopefully with a stranger. Try to match up with somebody you don't know. Four people in two of our services last week were brave enough to come sit and communicate something deeper than words with eye contact for 1 minute. Walk out these doors and go do that. You'll find some young faces that will show you where to go, where to take a seat. And then we have questions that you can respond to as well about what you long for right now, what you hope for, what you think a way forward is. So you are invited to do that visual communion after this prayer that we will now sing together.